Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Coming into Bard's Logic, Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation. I'd like to thank you all, whether you came in live from Blog Talk Radio or live from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. Also, if you are listening now on the recorded from the archives, thank you very much. And tonight, we will have on Bard's Logic Political Talk, we welcome back the America's Party 2012 presidential candidate, Tom Hoefling, and he will tell us about how the party has fared in the election, where the party stands now, and what are the plans for the future, and also answering some questions and discussing some of the topics of the day. But before I do that, I believe I have Mr. Hoefling on the line here. But first, if people may, they can consider going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website where you can see the link. Of course, not now, but I mean at a later time, is go to the link via the Blog Talk Radio. It's easy. It's on the Bard's Logic Political Talk homepage here on Blog Talk Radio. Just click that and go to the Get Involved page, and you will see a button on there. It's a red button that says Save an Elephant. And what that is it will take you to the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which for only $50 a year, you can sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. Of course, they're killed because of the ivory in their tusks, which are being bought by a lot of folks over there in China. And what a lot of these funds are also doing is paying for a lot of the weapons that are used in those wars that are going on that you hear about over in Africa. So I think it would make a wonderful Christmas gift for a loved one or for yourself to sponsor one of these baby elephants. And I believe part of the deal, you get, you know, some pictures and the story of the elephant you are sponsoring and things of that nature, and plus updates. So please go ahead and check that out either at the Bard's Logic Political Talk website or on the Ghost and Google the Wildlife David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust itself. So at this time, I believe I'll be opening up the mic to Mr. Hoefling. Is that you online?
Hi, Robert. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for coming back to Bard's Logic. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great.
Great, great. It's good to hear from you. We could just go straight into it if you'd like and tell us how you've been doing and how the America's Party fared in the 2012 election. I mean, we know what the result is, about $2 billion, spent, and we find ourselves in pretty much the exact same spot that we were, even though this was the most important election of our lifetime,
yes.
As we were 4 years ago.
Yeah, they're all the most important of our lifetime. We always hear that. Our contribution to that fundraising total and money expended on the election, by the way, was zero. We did not raise and we did not expend one penny in the presidential election. Frankly, all of the time, all of the energy, all of the money that Republicans, that conservatives poured into the presidential election in 2012 was wasted, Robert. It was all swamped. Folks ask me, well, how many votes did you get? Well, not very many. But guess what? We didn't pay anything for the ones we got, and the ones we got were principled people who weren't going to vote for the socialists being offered by either so-called major party.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you got to start somewhere and you got to build from somewhere. And, we've got a good principled foundation. We've got tens of thousands of principled conservatives across the country who are committed to the long haul to doing what it takes to get this country back on track.
One of the, in many of the other shows here on Bard's Logic and also the Tax and Rec show, which folks can hear on Sunday evenings from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern time. Let's talk about ending the duopoly, and part of that is to support the what we call Liberty or We the People grassroots parties, such as the America's Party. And support them because, as someone I spoke with from the Constitution Party, I think it's about competition. I think that would really help this nation, help America if we had some competition other than the duopoly. What do you think about that?
Well, I have described for many years, I've described this as a forefront war that we're fighting. One would be against, it has virtually become an atheistic, communistic party, the Democrat Party, and a compromised, unprincipled party, which is the Republican Party. And then we have the third front, which I would call, folks who don't like what's happening with either major party, but perhaps, in my opinion, would be somewhere off in the weeds in terms of their political philosophy. And then the fourth front is what I've always described as the most important front, and that's ourselves. And by ourselves, I mean moral conservatives, folks who still believe in the principles of the Declaration of Independence, people who still hold to the stated purposes of the U.S. Constitution, people who still believe that when you raise your right hand and swear that oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, you do it. That's us, and the real question is, can we get our act together? In other words, can we you know, get back on principle? Can we quit compromising those principles for any politician ever? Those core non-negotiable principles of life, liberty, private property, national sovereignty, national defense, those things. Can we, and then of course, can we, having made that commitment to principle, can we organize ourselves in such a way as to take this country back? See, I believe if we would do that, if the Christians in this country would get their act together, they would be the most potent political force on the face of the planet, and they would dominate politics in this country. The problem is compromise, a principle.
Well, I know back in 2008, at least with the Catholic Christians, is 54 to 56 percent voted for Obama, and the reason for that is, of course, you know, one of the topics that is of concern to Christians and Catholics is the abortion issue, and what a lot of them were convinced of is that while Obama would not outlaw abortion or go towards ways to outlaw abortion, that his policies would in some way decrease the amount of the need, as they put it, for the need. So what Obama and his ilk were saying was, we won't end abortion. We'll still give women the choice because, you know, we're all about that, right? However, but what we'll do is we'll install policies that will limit the reasons why women have abortions, which we all know is bunk.
You know, when it comes to abortion, when it comes to the destruction of innocent life, when it comes to the denial of the equal protection for every person that our Constitution absolutely demands, both major parties are an utter failure. The product of their work is abortion on demand. It's 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 or more little babies every day in this country being slaughtered. And it's not just that. It's not just the individual baby being killed. It's the bloodline. You know, the final crowning stated purpose of our Constitution is to secure the blessings of liberty to posterity. Okay, well, they're killing posterity. Instead of securing the blessings of liberty to them, they're killing them. And it isn't just the individual child, and it isn't just the bloodline. In other words, everyone who would come, you know, years down the road from that bloodline. But they're destroying the premises, the cornerstone, the foundation for American self-government. They're destroying, you know, the principled foundation for, you know, our claim to liberty in the United States. So they're destroying it all through their failure, their utter failure to provide the equal protection that the Constitution absolutely demands. And all the parties are failing in this regard.
The Democrat and the Republican, sure, I can't speak of, you know, at least in my opinion, at least, for, you know, the other parties, but, the grassroots party, even maybe some of the more liberal ones. I'm sad to say that the Green Party probably espouses a lot of
the
socially
party
liberal.
Supports abortion.
If we're talking about Gary Johnson, yes. Now the Ron Paul folks, I mean, they consider themselves libertarian, but I believe a lot of those folks are still would consider outlawing abortion. They would like to see it. Go ahead. It sounds like you've got some thoughts on that.
Well, the Ron Paul brand of libertarianism, of course, it's all over the board. You do have some big L libertarians in there. You have some objectivists. You have some people who really, when it comes to the moral basis for our country, they are virtual liberals, okay? And you do have those in the Ron Paul universe of supporters. You also have millions of people that fancy themselves constitutional conservatives, and a large number of them do consider themselves to be pro-life. But the problem is Ron Paul's arguments and his stances over the years are destructive of the principles of the Declaration of Independence. They're destructive of the moral, constitutional, and legal, political arguments against abortion. when he says that this should be left up to the states, that mm-hmm. demonstrates a total misunderstanding of the natural law, moral law basis for our country. Because no state, no government, no legislator, no executive, no judge has legitimate authority or power to alienate the supreme God-given unalienable right. In fact, it is the opposite. They have the absolute duty to protect it. Because as the founder said in the Declaration, that's why we have government, is to protect life, liberty, property, starting with the right to life. That's why we have government. Every office exists primarily to do that, to protect the people's rights, all of them, to provide equal protection for all in this country.
Yeah, I've never heard that take on Ron Paul's, because as I said, I was always of the understanding, and many are, who believe that Ron Paul himself is pro-life, just for the fact that I believe he's even said that, you know.
Well, whenever people say that, you know, I'm personally pro-life, or I'm personally this or that, I don't care what they are personally. What I care about is where do they stand on public policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard that out of Hillary Clinton. Well, you know, abortion's bad, but, you know, I don't personally support abortion. I wouldn't have one, right? We hear this all the time out of the John Kerry's, and, you know, we hear this out of the
Right, right, that's true.
No, I want to know where they stand on public policy. Is it okay to kill even one child, one innocent child? No. The Constitution forbids that multiple times.
Okay, I'm just typing a welcome to someone new in the chat. MD, Independent Party, Ron Paul is personally pro-life, but he's pro-choice for states. Okay, thank you for the participation, MD. Appreciate it. You know, of course,
you know,
if you'd like to call. Go ahead.
That's morally identical to the Stephen A. Douglas Democrat position in the 1850s. He said, I don't like slavery, but it's up to the states. The modern pro-choice for states position was actually crafted by Gerald R. Ford, and Ronald Reagan fought that. And none of the pro-lifers back in the late 70s, early 80s thought that Gerald R. Ford was pro-life. And his position is identical to the modern position of Ron Paul, Sarah Palin, John McCain. They're all pro-choice for states. They've abandoned the principles of the Declaration of Independence, the Samuel Adams natural law basis, the William Blackstone basis for a republic, which is the natural law, that any law that is unjust is null and void. It's not a law at all. It's lawless.
Interesting. We've talked a little bit about natural law here, and I actually have a professor friend who definitely would come and chime in more on that. MD chimed in, said that you're right, states' rights do not, or they don't, trump uninalienable rights.
Right. Yeah, see, we've got a problem today. We've got a general government, what the founders called, the framers of our Constitution called the general government, which we tend to shorthand call the federal government these days. They're doing all sorts of things that are outside their legitimate powers, like all of these entitlement programs, education, a long laundry list. Well over half of the federal budget is spent on programs and agencies that are outside the enumerated powers. So they're busy doing what they ought not, while they're neglecting to do what they ought. Their primary purpose for even having that office, which is to protect the unalienable right to life. So they're so busy doing what they ought not, and they just don't have time, apparently, to keep their oath to do the main thing that they ought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are folks from, I'm sure you're familiar with the Constitution Party, who are kind of in the same line with that believe if you cannot adhere to what they would think is can be the number one is protect the most innocent, then you know everything else, you know, under that, if you can't succeed in that, then you know, how can you succeed in anything else that the government is actually supposed to do?
Well, I know quite a lot about the Constitution Party. I had a lot of experience with them over the years. I know a lot of the people in the Constitution Party. There are people, leaders, state leaders in the Constitution Party who do get it when it comes to life. Folks like Les Riley down in Mississippi, he's led the personhood movement down there. He definitely gets it. There are some others who do. But overwhelmingly, they tend to be a Ron Paul sort of party. And I have little doubt that over the last couple of election cycles, if they would have had the chance to nominate Ron Paul, they would have. Now, they went ahead and
nominated. The Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party?
No, the Constitution Party.
Mm-hmm.
I have little doubt. I mean, heavily, you know, Ron Paul-type support in the Constitution Party. I have no doubt that they would have nominated him given the chance. As a matter of fact, I've seen polls, for example, from California that have shown this.
When you talk about the kind of people in the party itself, you talk about the party leadership.
I think it's pretty much a general thing. There's a lot of Ron Paul support in the Constitution Party. But my point is, this time around, they went ahead and nominated Virgil Goot.
Right.
Who, as a congressman, first as a Democrat and then as a Republican, pretty much towed the National Right to Life line, which includes support for fetal pain bills and things like that are immoral and unconstitutional. And he refused to swear those things off. If folks want to go read up on it, they can. Go to American Right to Life's website. It's Pro-Life Profiles. And I'm listed as a Tier 1 personhood pro-lifer there. Virgil Goot is listed in their Tier 2. And the things that I just described are why. His support, his continuing support for that type of legislation, which, National Right to Life has been embedding in our codes, the U.S. code and state codes, for about a decade. This legislation describes the child in the womb as a person, and then invariably spells out how they can go ahead and kill that child. It allows the abortionists to kill certain classes of those human beings. It's immoral. It's utterly unconstitutional. Those code sections are unconstitutional. They should be struck out of our codes. Fetal pain legislation, heartbeat legislation, all of that stuff.
But, well, actually, two things. It's Ohio, is, you know, talking about the right to life, I must admit that recently, at least in Ohio, I can't speak for the national right to life, but at least in Ohio, I've really lost a lot of respect for the Ohio right to life, because even while you had folks such as Newt Gingrich, who has been running, who was, you know, still actively running, you had the Ohio Right to Life folks endorse Mitt Romney. And, I mean, that's just unbelievable.
National Right to Life and their state affiliates have had their pockets full of the money of Mitt Romney and his friends for years now. Ohio Right to Life just pushed hard for a heartbeat bill. And it
actually went in Ohio, right. Right.
Yeah, and it just failed in the Senate. Now, it failed for the wrong reasons. It was a bunch of liberal Republicans that scotched it, but this is no surprise. Frankly, Planned Parenthood just laughs at these National Right to Life people because they know they got them right where they want them. They give up the principles that argue against abortion every time right up front. So everything they do is just a big joke, and the Democrats just laugh at it.
Well, I know the heartbeat bill that you're talking about, at least here, it's being touted, and I'm not saying it's the truth of it, but it's being touted as, you know, the strongest anti-abortion bill that's out there.
Yeah, the only problem is it's immoral and it's unconstitutional because, first of all, let me speak as a Christian, okay? In Genesis chapter 9, it forbids the shedding of any innocent blood. I think everyone knows the Ten Commandments says thou shalt not murder, right? The Declaration of Independence says all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, starting with the right to life.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, and of course, every clause of the stated purposes in the preamble of the Constitution, every abortion violates every clause. And the 5th and 14th Amendments not only forbid the killing of any innocent person, but they require equal protection under the law for every person. So when you are creating these subclasses of persons that you can kill, there's no criteria in the Bible or in our founding documents or in our supreme law that makes the criteria whether you can detect a heartbeat or not, or whether the child can feel pain. I ask these people all the time, I say, do you think it's okay to just take your .45 and put a bullet in the heart of a paraplegic? They won't feel a thing. You think it's okay to give grandma, you know, a big dose of drugs, you know, and then smother them to death? They won't feel a thing. No, that's not the criteria. It's, are they a person? If they are a person, then they are protected equally by our laws.
Well, I don't want to spend, you know, the whole, I mean, I'm very anti-abortion. Now, I don't say I'm pro-life because I'm, through my understanding, is to be complete, you know, to be pro-life, you also have to be against the death penalty, and I am actually a supporter of the death penalty.
No. The death penalty is pro-life. Again, go read Genesis chapter 9, where God forbids the shedding of innocent blood. He requires that if someone does shed innocent blood, even an animal, that by men shall their blood be shed. That was the first granting by God of the executive power of the sword to men collectively or governmentally, okay? No, the death penalty is biblical. It's definitely constitutional. The Constitution, obviously, why in the Fifth Amendment, in the original Bill of Rights, right in the heart of it, would it, you know, say without due process? You can lose your life if you take someone else's life. No, the death penalty is definitely pro-life.
Interesting. I've never heard that part of it, pull of it either. As I said, most people that I talk to consider themselves pro-life are also, you know, for the death penalty as well. But that, I just want to spend a couple more minutes on this because I know this is important to a lot of the listeners, because I do have a lot of listeners who come on, you know, an audience and speakers and guests. They come on and, you know, they do support Ron Paul, or I agree with a lot of what he says, and it really, you know, when you say that Ron Paul is not pro-life, that he supports life, actually, Trog in the chat makes mentions of it. I guess maybe to clarify more on your point, I know you mentioned it somewhat on why you would say that. Now, he's come out and said, you know, I'm a doctor, you know, I've seen, you know, what abortions can do to people, not only the babies, but the women as well. So if we can elaborate on that just a little bit, and then I'd like to move on. Just because I want to bring folks in, of course, in the chat on that. Go ahead.
I'll sum it up very briefly. Look, your God-given unalienable rights are not dependent on location, okay? Your God-given unalienable rights were given to you by God, not by any man. No man has any legitimate right to strip you of them just because you're located in a particular place. So when you say, well, it's up to the states, like Mitt Romney did throughout this whole campaign, okay, or it should be up to a Democratic vote, you're denying that. It's not based on where you are. It's what you are. It's your intrinsic quality as an individual human being made in the image and likeness of God. It's not where you're located.
And to sum it up, two things. One, and there's another person who talks about location, not necessarily location, but it's talk about geography, but location of where the person is, whether it's outside of the womb or inside, is, and you might be familiar with it, and then we'll close out after these two things, is it's called The Case for Life. It's a great book. It's a kind of a debate handbook for those who want to debate the case against abortion. It's by a Scott Klusendorf. That's Klusendorf. And I'll be putting a link on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. I'm going to try to find an Amazon link. So if anyone would like to pick up the book, They can find a link to that to the website, or just go, of course, to Amazon.com. But it could be faster just going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website and finding the link there on the, you know, on the website. So, and then second, as I said, you know, I want to close out is, you know, that is an interesting point of geography, and that's how I want to close out. So you're saying that when you're talking about location of, you know, and of course that's, you're talking about leaving the abortion issue up to the states. It's about geography and location, you know, or
yeah,
you, what you're talking about.
And that's
an interesting point, you know, because one of the things we talk about here on the show is state sovereignty and a lot of laws, such as the possibility of you know, the abortion issue being left up to the states. However, I mean, I have to admit that does make some logical sense when you're talking about the location portion of that argument. You know, that location should not matter. You know, by, it doesn't matter what state that the child is. But moving on, I'd like to go to, you know, we talked about, you know, the 2012 election, and what I'd like to do now is what's the, you know, the America's Party and yourself currently doing, you know, preparing for, you know, staying in different states or 2014, or what are you guys doing now?
Well, yeah, we're organizing what we've built over the last year, what we've collected up. We're organizing it state by state by state. We have affiliates in all the states, and we're organizing them. 2014 was all about the legislative branch. And so our main goal right now is to organize our people to find and raise up a whole new generation of leaders to turn over these legislatures, state legislatures, the Congress, because, you know, most of the people sitting in those seats they're killing us. They're destroying our country.
We need to
throw them all out, and we need to put people in who understand the first obligations of their oath.
Yeah, but you mentioned something earlier in the show, and we've talked about this the last time you hear, you know, not in depth, but, you know, in some content, is that about the money. And now you said, you know, you guys didn't, you know, collect any money or anything of that nature. Do you feel that would remain to be a possibility of being a successful strategy for 2014? Because you've seen how money... Yeah, well, I mean, Bill, as you said, $2 billion. If you know, as we know, $2 billion were spent, and nothing has changed. So perhaps there is some validity, and well, let's not, you know, let money being the deciding factor, because we obviously see how effective that was. But without collecting, you know, without your contributions and things of that nature, and spending that kind of money, how can you have a successful organization and what needs to be done, in your opinion, you know, to get folks to come your way, the America's Party's way, or even just, you know, away from the duopoly of the Democrats or Republicans in general?
Well, right now we have a process that's almost utterly controlled by the money and the media, because that's the way the two major parties want it, and that's what they've allowed to develop, okay? We've got to break loose from that if we're ever going to have government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Mm-hmm.
We have to put the power, the actual power, back in the hands of the people to exercise their duties as citizens. You know, so you can't just talk about doing that. You have to actually set the example, which is what we've been trying to do with America's Party. As you know, America's Party takes no donations. We don't want any of the money interest anywhere near our platform, our principles, or our means for keeping our party on a principled basis. So does that mean we think we can get our country back without any resources? No. We're simply saying, put your money somewhere much smarter than sending it off to the RNC to go spend $1 million on some raging homosexual congressional candidate in Massachusetts, or Didi Scozafava, or whatever. Don't give them the money. Don't give it to National Right to Life. Don't give it to the NRA. Don't give it to any of these national organizations. No. Take your money where 100% of it will go for what you intended it. In other words, give it directly to truly vetted, principled candidates, and you got to do the hard work of vetting these candidates. give it to them. Spend it where you live to turn out 100 or 200 or 500 votes for truly principled candidates. And, you know, last, if you know somebody who's in the grassroots, in the trenches, you know, actually serving you and actually serving the cause, you know, help them. Help them keep their lights on and keep their families fed so they don't, you know, drive themselves to financial ruin or marital ruin or anything else while they're out actually doing the heavy lifting that so few seem to want to do. So that's our advice to people. Put the money where it counts, not send it off so that the Republican Party can continue to just use your own money against you and manipulate you.
Yeah, and both parties, you know, both parties are guilty of that. And I think one of the things they're also guilty of, and I find it real successful to keep everyone in line, and that's why I think the third parties didn't fare as well in this most important election of our lifetime. You would think that if there was any change to have happened in any election cycle, you think it would have been in the most important election of our lifetime. I mean, you've heard Sean Hannity say that many times. Oh, it's the most important election of our lifetime. And some even thought, well, this one really was, and perhaps that, you know, that'll pan out to be true. But with it being the most important, you think the greatest change could have happened, but nothing changed. You know, so I mean, it's obvious what they did, you know, what happened did not work. Now, what one thing that the Democrats, Republicans, I think did that was very successful was scare tactics. I think the scare tactics that they used were par none. I think it'll, you know, I mean, I that's the thing I heard the most in this past 2012 election was people were afraid. Now, you know, and fear, for the most part, holds people back more than it motivates them to do anything. And I think in part that's why things didn't change, is so many people were afraid that the fear paralyzed them.
And well, yes. I think there's passages of Scripture that talk about God sending people's fears upon them. I mean, you know, what did all of these Christians, all of these pro-lifers, all these conservatives get out of this election? They got exactly what they feared. Okay, look, until the American people stop functioning on fear and start operating on principle and faith, okay, nothing's going to change. You're just going to keep getting manipulated. You're going to keep, you're like, you know, cattle being herded to the chutes, or maybe a better analogy, you're like sheep, you know, to go get sheared again every 2 years or every 4 years. They're just going to keep shearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to just stop it, and you got to say, look, let's operate not on fear anymore, but on principle, and then let's go from there.
Yeah, we were saying that, you know, for months and months here, you know, on the show.
Yeah. Well, and it led to all kinds of really weird stuff. I mean, the Republican universe of people, they're just like the walking wounded now. You know, I mean, I don't have any malice toward them. You know,
go ahead, Tom. I mean, I don't either.
No,
but
I'm saddened by the whole process. But they don't have to be like this. It doesn't have to be like this. People can simply say, okay, what are the main principles that can be negotiated? Look, we can argue all day long about tax policy or stuff like that, okay? You know, what the proper limits are on government, all of those things. But look, get the main thing settled in your mind and just quit compromising them, because these people count on you compromising. That's what the Republican Party has become, a culture of 100% compromise. In the end, they always expect you to give up all your principles. I mean,
John McCain, and it's smoke and mirrors. It's smoke and mirrors too. Yeah. Oh, exactly. And it's smoke and mirrors too. Just like, and we'll talk about this in the second hour. Is you know, with current events, and one of the things I want to talk about, of course, you know, you've heard a lot about, I'm sure, about, you know, we're in this financial cliff that we're getting ready to go over.
Yeah, right.
By the end of the year. So, you know, in the second hour, I want to talk about that. I also like to you know, talk about something that's coming up as well, starting in January, of course, is the effects that are going to be coming through because of Obamacare, and if there's any hope still of getting rid of that. And I think there could be. So we could talk about that later. But I want to get back to getting ready for 2014. So that being said, one of the things that we've talked about is going out and putting boots on the ground day one after the election, okay? Because it's trying to do something in 1 year to get something going for 2014 or even 2016. We had a gentleman on, Robbie Wells, he's running as an independent, is talking about getting a coalition of grassroots folks and parties together under a coalition. He's already starting to run and get an organization together for a presidential run in 2016. But we can get to that later. I want to get to 2014. So what we're saying is, well, there's some background stuff going on there, so I don't know.
Sorry about that.
That's okay, Tom. But I just wanted to, let you know whether I didn't know if you heard it on your end. But we're saying boots on the ground, getting things already begun the day after the election. What is the America's Party is folks getting ready to get stuff together for collecting signatures? Because one of the big problems in 2012, it seemed, was ballot access. And I heard from multiple third party folks that they spent so much time, just trying to get on ballots, get ballot access, that they really didn't have an ample amount of time to campaign, to actually campaign and get the word out. And that might have been yet another reason, maybe not as big as the fear tactic one that I suggested, that the third parties didn't get nearly as much of the vote that I personally thought that they would, just because, of what we're facing with the two parties and this being, as I said, the most important election of our lifetime, and you think one of the greatest times that there would have been the greatest change, but as I said, we didn't see that happening. So is there anything with getting folks together, boots to the ground, getting signatures, things of that nature for, as you said, more local runs like Senate and House for 2014?
Well, we'll be running legislative candidates, as many as we possibly can, as many as we can possibly find that actually are principled. As far as the ballot thing, you see, and this is one of the problems with the
Congress. Real quick, before we get to the ballot access, what would be your vetting process for, someone's principle? Because one thing that happened with the Tea Party is, the Tea Party really, they helped push in a lot of Republicans who they thought were principled, but then turned around and just being rhinos in disguise. Rhino in elephant clothing, so to speak. So how would you vet the folks to know that they truly are principled?
That's one of the most important questions you could ask tonight, and give me just a second. I'll answer it. Before I answer it, I got to say that our party is what we call a meta party. In other words, so many of the third parties, they basically want to become another GOP or another Democrat party. They want to be one of the two major parties, okay? We don't want that. We don't care about party labels. So if you go to all of our documents, we say right up front, we make our endorsements and all of those things based on principle, not party labels. So we run a lot of candidates as Republicans. We don't care as long as they're principled. Now, how do we determine if they're principled? I would direct your listeners to selfgovernment.us, which is our national committee site, America's Party National Committee, selfgovernment.us. And our starting point is our leadership pledge. You can go there, you can read our affiliation, you can read our platform, and you can read about our party. But in terms of leadership, whether it's leaders in our party or whether it's a candidate for President of the United States or a candidate for school board or legislature or anything else, our starting point is that leadership pledge. First of all, will they sign off on those principles? Will they agree to quit giving aid and comfort to those who compromise the core principles of the republic? And if they say yeah to that, now that's not an end unto itself for us. That's the starting point for accountability, because we believe we're not going to get anywhere until we begin to, in truth, in reality, hold our politicians accountable, and they have to be willing to be accountable. And we don't want them spending all their money or time raising money. We want them spending their time being accountable to the people they're supposed to represent.
Well, would you support something? Because, well, that being said, would you support something like term limits?
I think term limits is not part of our platform. It's kind of a peripheral issue. I consider it to be a Band-Aid. I mean, if they pass them, would I shed any tears? No. But, no, we have to start vetting our candidates. And we got to make sure that the ones we send there are actually principled and they actually stay that way. They actually fulfill their oath of office.
Now, if they were, let's say they were previously a politician in another party, would there be a crime? I mean, of course, you might not have anything set right now, but just as a note of thought, would there be any, I don't want to say litmus test, but would there be any, like, percentage of voting a certain way in, like, on pro-life issues, for instance, or something of that nature that you would look at that would be kind of a basis of a criteria on whether that would be something that you would allow to be in the party? What would some of those numbers be if you know what those are right now?
Well, you see, American politics, thankfully, is mainly about words, okay? As they say, politics in America is war by other means. So I'm glad that we fight with words and not with bullets, okay? Most of politics is about words, okay? So you have to listen very carefully to what people in politics say. Okay, but then you have to compare it with their actions. And there's only a tiny handful of things that amount to action in American politics. One is, what public policies do they support? Two, what legislation do they support? And three, what other politicians do they support? And what is their position on public policy? So we definitely look at who people who come to us and want an endorsement or nomination. We definitely look at their record. We definitely look at what other politicians they've been in bed with or who they've endorsed. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the critical things that we do. Because if they'll support Mitt Romney, they own that. They've co-signed his political note. So they own his fathership of Romney care and gay marriage and homosexualized public schools and gun bans and all of those things. They are complicit. They're complicit when he goes up on his webpage throughout the campaign and says, the judges make our laws. And abortion, whether or not to kill innocent people should be left up to a Democratic vote. You know, they own that, whether they like it or not. That's part of their political resume. Now, if one of them came back to us and said, you know what, I did support that stuff, but I was wrong. And we really believe them. If they can walk the walk, we're willing to listen. But, we do look at their records. And we look at their stances on public policy.
Okay. Now, in the last part of this section of tonight, after the top of the hour, I'd like to get on some current issues. Is that, as I mentioned earlier, we had Robbie Wells on the show here, and one of the things he was talking about is building a coalition of third parties. Now he's, I believe, as of this point, running as somewhat of an independent for the 2016, as I said, presidency. But however, I guess when you're talking about down ballots, such as for Congress or Senate, things of that nature, on down, is that he talks about a coalition of grassroots third parties, which perhaps could, all of them fall under the banner, of course, one, independent party candidate for president, at least. Would that be something that you or the American Party think would consider being a part of? Because it is, I'm not saying yeah or nay, but one thing I think it would be, at least for myself, but would be, is that it definitely, I think, would be needed in some ways to go up against, the coalition would definitely have to go up against the power that the duopoly has right now, because you have all these different third parties, of course, you know, the America's Party, Libertarians, Green Party, Constitution Party, you know, you have them, but, you know, as one, as separate entities, it's going to be very tough for them to be effective against the duopoly, at least as things stand now. Yeah. But perhaps as a coalition, they might, you know, be able to pull their power together, so to speak, and pull their supporters and actually get some electoral wins. Would that be something that, as I said, you or a America's Party would support?
Or
something to look at least. I mean, it's too early to say whether it be a supporting thing. It's something to consider. How about, you know, that's probably a fair question.
I have a multifaceted answer to your question.
Sure.
Some of it is based on principle. Some of it is based on experience. I have about 25 years of political experience working on campaigns at all levels all across this country. And we started America's Party about 5 years ago. And, you know, I had some of those thoughts. You know, we'll try and pull these people together. It's kind of a pipe dream, frankly, Robert. Look, what I've learned is quit thinking about the group, okay? Think about the principles and think about the individual representatives. We're supposed to have a representative form of government. Let's not focus. I don't want to focus on the party label. I want to focus on the core principles and the individual candidates, regardless of party. You know, look, if the Constitution Party has a candidate that I can support that I truly believe is principled, we'll support him in a flash. We have. If the Republican Party has a real Republican, in other words, somebody who knows what that word means, okay, and actually has proven that they understand what it means and they function that way in their politics, we're more than happy to support them. Shoot, even once in a while, we'll find a straight Democrat, believe it or not, that actually gets it. It's rare, but
Very rare. I think that, at least in my opinion, is a Democrat that it turned independent. That was the closest for a person. I'm having a brain freeze. I can't remember his name. But
well, the thing is, Robert, look, there's only one thing that can truly unify us, and that is principle. Okay, and not personalities. This whole cult. Look. You've got to deal with personalities the way our system is set up. We have individual representatives, and they are personalities, so you have to deal with that, okay? But you can't put that front and center. You got to put the principles front and center. And if you got a candidate, you'd be amazed how people unify when you actually get a principal candidate. I'm going to use one example, one of our candidates, a gentleman by the
Joe
name
Lieberman,
of Joe
Lieberman, actually, was the guy I was thinking about. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No,
this popped in my head, the Democrat who, you know, I many times made more sense than any Democrat I know. That's Joe Lieberman.
Oh, no.
But go ahead.
No, Tom Shaw, he was going to, the first time we encountered him a few years back, he was going to run as an independent for the state legislature here in the district just north of me here in Iowa. And we began to talk, and he became involved in our twice-weekly America Summit calls, and we talked at great length about a lot of stuff, principles and practical stuff and everything. Anyway, he ended up running as a Republican in the primary and took out a liberal, gun-banning, abortion-loving Republican candidate in the primary, went on, won a seat that had been in Democrat hands for 20 years, 2-1. And this time the Democrats didn't even try and run anybody against him. The Republican establishment did because they hate his guts, frankly, because he's principled. And anyway, the Republican establishment hates him because he won't back up on life or guns or any of our rights. While they, you know, hand them away every session, hand over fist. Well, in his district, though, his constituents love it. I mean, you can have a political meeting, and he's in my district now after we redistricted. Thank God. I have the best representative in America, I think. And you come into the district, and there's political meetings. There might be a congressman there, like Steve King, or you might have presidential candidates, whatever. The crowd gives him applause. Tom Shaw stands up, and he gets a standing ovation every time because his constituents love him because he's principled and he doesn't play games. He just tells it straight. And I think it's principle that can unify us, you know, followed by having personalities, representatives that are actually principled. You know, these are people that you can trust. You still have to be accountable, but you can at least trust them to do the right thing.
Indeed, it's about the top of the hour, and I know at the bottom of the hour, folks like to call in and chime in or ask any questions or things of that nature, because now we're going to get into the portion about current events and then talk about that, you know. And the call-in number is area code 347-945-7428, and then if you'd like to chime in, or just listen, but if you that's fine. But if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial, and I will have you come in. But at this point, it's about the top of the hour, so I'd like to start off with talking about, well, of course, what we're hearing a lot about in the, you know, the media, of course, is about the financial cliff that we're getting, you know, the way to fall off on. And you know, I was actually talking to my wife the other day. I said, weren't we in some kind of, like, December, oh, my gosh, we got to get something done for the people, you know, by the end of the year. They're not going to fund Social Security. They're not going to, fund, you know, Medicare. They're not going to fund unemployment benefits, you know, tax cuts. Wasn't it about this time last year there was some kind of crisis that had to be avoided? You know, it seems like every year there's something like that, at least, you know, in the past couple of years. And now it seems like we're looking at that as well with this, you know, financial cliff that they're talking about. What's your thoughts on how the Congress and the Senate is handling that? And what's your thoughts on the idea in general?
Well, it's all a sham, of course. You know, there's an old joke in Washington. I don't even know who started this, but it's been around for decades. And the old joke is, in Washington, the Democrats propose to tear down the Washington Monument, and the Republicans respond with a plan to do it in 3 efficient stages. And let's back up just a little bit, just to lay a little predicate for what we're seeing right now. You remember in 2010, all of these Tea Party congressmen we all worked so hard to elect, right?
Mm-hmm.
They go up to Washington, and they were representing a bunch of people who were saying, taxed enough already, right? So they go up to the Hill, and it was a historic win for Republicans. Picked up a record number of seats around the country. Anyway, these Tea Party congressmen and all the other Republicans, they go up to the Hill, and the first lecture, the first day they're up there, is from John Boehner telling them, if you don't support raising the debt ceiling $2.5 trillion, you're a bunch of big babies. That's
mm-hmm.
the gist of what he told them. And guess what? Almost virtually all of them went along with it. In the end, there were only 8 Republicans who did not support raising the debt ceiling by one
year. It's smoke and mirrors. I mean, go ahead.
It is. So they, you know, they have this big kabuki theater where they go back and forth and they argue over this, and this is a crisis. And they were agreed on the main point from day one, Obama and Boehner, which was they were going to rob our posterity of their right, God-given right to government by consent, by running them into debt another $2.5 trillion. They were going to do that. Now, they set up this so-called fiscal cliff. Look, the problem is unconstitutional spending, stupid. I hate to paraphrase James Carville, but it's unconstitutional spending. I would call them, say they spend like drunken sailors, but I wouldn't want to insult drunken sailors. At least drunken sailors spend their own money.
Right.
So, I mean, look, this is all just a big game. I mean, the Republicans, you know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they're going to complain for a while, and they're going to act like they're going to fight it, and then they'll give in.
Look, the Republicans voted against Obamacare, I think it was 32 times. But guess what? A couple of months ago, when it came time to fund it, guess who funded it?
There you
John
go.
Boehner
yeah.
and the House Republicans through the continuing resolution. They funded Obamacare. So Obama and Reid and Pelosi built the vehicle And guess who's paying the payments and putting the gas in the tank and putting the tires on the vehicle? It's the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a big game to them. And, you know, I know people all over this country, Robert. The people in this country are suffering right now, and it's fixing to get a lot worse. People are struggling just to pay their
utilities. They're scared, too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, they should be, in a sense. But no, people are hurting, and these people, I mean, they're like Nero, you know, fiddling while Rome burns. And there's no sign that they're going to do anything different. We're living in a time now.
No, none whatsoever.
The centerpiece of the Republican Party now, in their platform and in their recent presidential nominee, was to defend the programs of the New Deal and the Great Society. Fully defend them all the way. So socialism all the way. Both major parties, they're both pushing socialism to the max. And we're about, you know, I mean, Obamacare is threatening to tip us fully into the socialist column.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of that, that's one of the things that I, you know, want to talk about. Of course, we're hearing about next month, you know, a lot of the things coming through with Obamacare. And I know where, I won't say, you know, on there where she works, but I know, and it's not just her employment. A lot of places are saying, well, you know, we don't want to have to, you know, give out these benefits, or we can't. Either they won't or they can't. They just put a hiring freeze on full-time employers, or, you know, employees, I should say.
Oh, I know.
They're just not going to hire, they're just not going to hire employees, you know, our full-time employees, and all those that are full-time, or part-time, I should say, that are part-time now will not see full-time hours.
Yeah, you know, I guess the old rule is be careful what you wish for. I mean, now they've got Obamacare and they're going full speed ahead. But look, they're fixing to, you know, finish off this economy. I mean, people just can't bear this burden. You've got people walking on thin ice and they're dropping this huge burden on their back. It's not sustainable. I mean, the New Deal programs are not sustainable. The Great Society programs are not sustainable. Medicare Part D that the Republicans pushed through in the Congress
mm-hmm.
back during the Bush administration, they're not sustainable. None of these things are, because socialism is not sustainable. I mean, you can only draw so much blood and the patient dies, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was saying the other day, it's going to be a two-class system. You're going to have, you know, you're poor and you're rich, and you're pretty much, you know, middle class is going to continually shrink.
It's worse than poor. They're making people into wards of the state.
Yeah.
So they're not just poor.
Well,
they're
going to get constituency of dependence.
Well, yeah. I mean, people are becoming reliant now on a government check, and it's more than half of the American public now is reliant on a government check. And, you know, I'm sorry, this isn't America. This isn't freedom. You know, this is why one of the radical things I said in this recent, I got in a debate with Virgil Goode before the American Independent Party nomination in California. He defended the entitlement programs, even though eventually I finally forced him to admit they weren't constitutional, but he still defends them. And I said, look, no, I want to get rid of all the socialism. I want to go back to our constitution.
I'm going to back up on that one a little bit. Where was this at? Because I've had Virgil Goode on the show a couple times, and you know, and I've actually got the opportunity to speak with him, you know, personally, and you know, through the conversations that I had, the conversations I've had with him and speaking with him here on the show, I've never gotten that nor the impression of that.
Okay,
so,
you should have looked at his website during the campaign, because he's full blown. Supports Social Security and Medicare, full blown.
You're talking about not supporting Medicare or Social Security. Okay.
I'm talking about the centerpieces of the New Deal and the Great Society, which are Social Security and Medicare. Those were the centerpieces. That was the introduction of socialism into America, in terms of entitlement programs that aren't constitutional. He admitted it when I debated him. that they weren't constitutional. But he said, oh, it's a contract. I said, no, it's not. You can go read the Social Security Act itself. It says Congress can change the terms whenever they want. Supreme Court in 1960 said it's not a contract. No, it's an unsustainable Ponzi scheme. That's what it is.
Well, yeah, it's definitely unsustainable. And I suggest anyone 40 years old or over, when they're planning for their retirement, that they don't even take into account that Social Security is going to be there. I think it's impractical, illogical, and that the folks that try to keep it for folks who are probably 40 and under. I mean, that's what I think of it.
So that's all true, but even more fundamentally important than that is the fact that it's unconstitutional, and every single officer of government raises their right hand and swears to God to support the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So they're unconstitutional. So even if it works, which it doesn't, it's the worst investment any people have ever made in retirement, and there's no it's a scam.
Because there's not going to be any return.
Well,
look at the general fund. Go ahead.
Well, that's what I told Virgil in that debate. I said, look, we've had generations of politicians that have lied and they stole that money, okay, and they spent it, every single red cent. It's all gone, okay? Now, you can tell me that we owe a bunch of people money, but in order to do that, we have to instruct our current politicians to lie and steal from other people, which is current producers and posterity. Okay, that's immoral. Government by consent is one of our unalienable rights. And I'm sorry, my great-grandchildren cannot consent to be born, with hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of debt on their shoulders. That's not right.
Okay. And speaking of, this wasn't a topic I was planning on covering tonight, but since we're here, let's go ahead and do it. This is for 2014 and beyond. What would you propose doing with Social Security and Medicare then?
Well, right away, first of all, again, it's not constitutional in terms of the federal constitution. So the first thing you have to do is devolve it to the states. You say, look, states, if your constitution in your state allows this sort of socialism, that's up to you. Okay, here you go. Remember, these are pay-as-you-go programs, okay? So they're sucking the money out of these states right now. So quit sending the money to Washington, have them run it through a big bureaucracy and send a little bit back with strings attached. Stop it. Don't let the money leave your state. If you want to have a retirement program in your state, do it. But quit violating the Constitution. And it would make more sense. Because you wouldn't be feeding these huge bureaucracies and this, these programs aren't in the first place about retirement or health care or any of those things anyway, or education. It's about control, Robert. It's about controlling the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what these things are. They don't care about you. Bureaucrats don't care about you. They don't care about old folks. They don't, look, even if they do, it doesn't matter. No.
Well, I remember someone saying that, by giving taxes, Social Security, what have you, it's like giving the government an interest free loan or something like that. I can't remember exactly verbatim what the person said. But.
Well, what it is, it's a welfare program. No matter what Virgil Boot or any Republican congressman or any of these people keep lying and say, I'm sorry, but they're lying to the American people. What they are, we have three income taxes. We have the regular income tax, then we have the Social Security income tax, and then we have the Medicare income tax. And they tuck that money out of your check.
Right. Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say, folks are some folks are lying. I think that's kind of strong words, but elaborate that. Are you saying because they're saying it's constitutional, you're saying they're lying to the American people?
Well, they know it's not constitutional. I mean, the same lies, you hear the same lies over and over again. They use the General Welfare Clause, which turns the General Welfare Clause on its head. The father of the U.S. Constitution said, and let's see if I can get this quote right, James Madison said, let me think if I can reproduce it, this quote. He said, let's see. I'm going to have to paraphrase. He said, I cannot put my finger on that article of the Constitution which gives Congress, for the purposes of benevolence, the right to expend the money of their constituents. Okay, the Constitution was of enumerated, limited powers, but by opening the door up to socialism, we've created a government of unlimited powers to tax in an unlimited way and to spend money on anything they want. It's unlimited government. That's what you get when you get these socialist programs. And they say, well, you know, we have $16 trillion in debt, but we actually have $100-some trillion in debt because of all of these liabilities. All these liabilities aren't true contractual debt. No, they're talking about the empty false promises of generations of American politicians. They're empty lies. They're making promises for future generations that future generations cannot possibly keep. They can't keep them. I mean, there's only a couple workers now for each Social Security recipient. This is
right, right. And
as
I said, I do agree in that what you said about, they're unsustainable. And I did get the opportunity to, I had the opportunity to listen to any debates between yourself and Virgil Goode. But I have seen other debates that Virgil Goode was in, and as I said, we've talked to him. And when it comes to Social Security and Medicare, he definitely, is at least, I can't speak for the man. I mean, of course, next time he's on, or if next time he comes on, or someone from the Constitution Party, I have Brent Shuttlebeam from the Constitution Party on tomorrow night, and I'm sure we'll discuss this some about the Medicare.
Randy Stuffelbeam is his name.
Stuffelbeam, right? Yeah. Always get the T. I don't know why I can't get that out of my mouth for some reason.
Let me say this, Robert. The problem is that Virgil, early in the campaign, he went and WorldNet Daily covered it, and he had a big thing where he had a balanced budget plan. Okay, and he totally bypassed entitlements. He said, no, we're not going to touch any of that. And he went straight after the defense budget. Now, in the first place, I believe that's wrong, because the defense budget, by and large, is constitutional. And, in fact, defending the country is the primary reason we have a federal government. Okay, but secondly, you can't balance this budget on the back of the defense budget. You could zero out our defense budget, and you wouldn't, you barely make a dent. It's the entitlements. It's not just the entitlements. It's the interest on the debt on paying these entitlements that are unconstitutional. That's breaking our country.
Well, I think it'd be a good segue to the next portion that I'd like to talk about is. As I was looking through some social media today, and, I don't get a lot of time to do that, at least, especially lately. I haven't had the opportunity to do that. But a lot of to talk about the fiat money system and try and get back to the gold standard. So I'd like to touch base a little bit on that before the last 15 minutes here until we get to the bottom of the hour. And if folks like to call in to chime in on anything they heard tonight or talk about current events or things of that nature, or, the discussion sure. Is air code 347-945-7428. Just push the 1 on your phone dial to let me know if you'd like to chime in. So, as I said, I heard, I was looking at some things, unfortunately not as much depth as I'd like, but, I'll try to get back to the gold standard. Is that something you think would even be a possibility in this day and age? And if so, how would, just a brief, we don't got to go into details because,
it's
this a time,
complex
but,
subject. Monetary policy, currency, tax policy, these are all separate issues. Of course, they're all connected. See, we've created, Congress has given away their constitutional obligations to quasi-governmental organs like the Fed. Okay, you know, the post office is now a quasi-governmental. It's neither man nor beast. You know, we don't have control over it via our elected officials, and we also don't have control over it via the markets. The Fed is completely upside down. You're giving bankers, wealthy bankers, all of the power over our economy and over our very subsistence and existence. And it's all upside down. It's the power, just like politically now, all the power's in the hands of the media and the money interests. Monetarily, it's the same way, and it's backwards. And this is Congress's fault. They're the ones who have been given the authority and the responsibility over these things constitutionally by we the people. And we've got to turn it around. We've got to turn it upside down. The gold standard, and that's been tried in American history, and you know what happened? All the money got even concentrated in fewer hands. And pretty much the regular folks out there struggling to make a living about starved to death. So I don't think, you know, gold is a form of currency no matter how you cut it. But I don't think it should be the only one. I think we should have various.
Well, the dollar was backed by gold. I mean, what, I mean, right now it's not backed by pretty much anything except the reserve, you know. It's really not, it's really not backed by anything. Well, trust. Well, yeah, but once that trust is gone, when you know, which you see, I mean, with the credit rating in the United States going down, that trust is going away. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, if you don't get back to something that you can actually, you know,
you know, the founders, Washington and all the other founders, they put a great deal of stock in the full faith and credit of the United States, and we're still coasting on their wisdom. Okay. That our current crop of so-called leaders are destroying the full faith and credit of the United States. And they're doing it in the first place by unconstitutional spending on a biblical scale. That's what's doing it. You know, we need to get back. We need to reconstruct our entire economy from the bottom up. And we got to put the power back. At the personal level, at the family level, at the community level, and take it away from the big boys running everything from the top down. How do you do that? It's not easy. We need a whole
right,
lot more.
Right, totally. We want to talk about solutions on how would we, you know, cause, you know, as I said, you know, with the value of the dollar, you know, decreasing, the credit rating decreasing, you know, things where they talk about a lot of, we've talked about here a lot on the show, and Chris, I'm sure you're familiar with Chris, he's talked a lot about it here, you know, on the show, about China, you know, with all their trade deals and with oil and things of that nature, trading their oil in the, you know, in their currency. They're making trade deals around the world with their
currency. They're buying up the resources of the world with our money, no doubt about it.
Well, yeah, that's true. With our money, buying their products, and I mean, this, you know, I'm going to dedicate a whole show on this. We got some time, but you know, China's moving into Africa. I mean, you know, they with the resources there, the, you know, the land there, put some of their, you know, their folks there, as I mentioned earlier, the, you know, the trade deals. So. You know, with that being said, I mean, and they're buying a load of gold. I mean, they're buying up a lot of gold. I mean, and
they're buying all kinds of precious metals, and they're buying all kinds of things that are critical to a military machine. By the way, and you know, our national security is at stake here. Look, there's still communists over there. They're less now of a communist superstate than they are a fascist superstate. I mean, they've let their people have some measure of ownership, which, you know, it's more akin to a fascist superstate now. But you know, socialism will fall. I mean, they're on their way up right now. There's going to be lots of pipers to pay that they're still going to have to pay. Look, we can't necessarily do anything about what they do what we can, the only thing we can affect is what we do. And there's lots of ways that we can make our country super competitive in the world again, in our own market and in the world market. One thing is get rid of this stupid income tax system. Because it's just benefiting China and it's destroying us.
Well, and speaking of China, I'll take this opportunity to do a little plug for the folks who are listening new here. One of the things that that China's doing is buying a lot of ivory. And the way that they're getting the ivory is through the killing of elephants over there in Africa. And what that's doing is it's orphaning a lot of baby elephants over there. But one way that folks can help in that is there is the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. And if you go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, which you can find the link on here on Blog Talk Radio on the show's homepage here, where you also see the show's icon, just click that and you'll see on the Get Involved page a red button that is to the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. And for only $50 a year, you can sponsor one of these baby elephants, and I believe you get a picture of your sponsor and also some updates and some information background. I think it would make a wonderful Christmas gift for an adult or a child, or even if you're into buying yourself Christmas gifts, it'd be a good one for yourself because you're not have something, but you're doing some good. And also one of the things that the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust does is they help fight against poachers out there, which what helps other than the wildlife is a lot of the arms that are being used in a lot of the wars over there and the tribal wars and things like that you're hearing about over there. A lot of the money is coming from the sales of this ivory to purchase those weaponry that are killing people. So you read more about that on the website and what they do, or you can listen to them talk about them themselves as the folks from the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust here on Bard's Logic, and you can just look that interview with them up in the archives. And I just think it's a great organization. And as I said, for only $50 a year, make a great Christmas gift. But that's my time for the little plug. Thank you very much for listening to it, and let's continue on. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, it's kind of what I said earlier in terms of our politics. The real important front is what we ourselves do. In other words, can moral conservatives get their act together, get back to principle, quit compromising, and actually organize in a practical, effective way. And it's the same way nationally in terms of our competitiveness in the world and our national security as well. It's less important. I mean, it's always important what other people do, and you got to keep an eye on that. But look, you know, I do believe in peace through strength. Okay, and our strength as a country starts with our moral strength. We've got to reconnect with our moral strength, our faith in God, our dedication to self-evident truth and principle. So we've got to build our strength back up economically. We got to just quit being stupid. Get rid of this stupid tax system that's destroying our economy and choking all the life out of everything, our trade, our manufacturing, our politics, and everything else. So, you know, we've got to make ourselves strong, and then we don't have to worry so much about China or Iran or anybody else. Maybe we can do that.
Then go ahead. Well, since you brought it up, I wasn't planning on asking anything over in the Middle East, but there have been some recent developments and developments over in Egypt. As well. So it's, if you'd like to chime in on any of that, I'd like to get what your take. Let's go ahead and start off with the last part is Egypt with, what we're seeing going on over there.
Well.
with the elections and things of that nature, the violence.
Well, I mean, it's all a joke. It's all run by the Muslim Brotherhood. They've handed Egypt over to radical Islam. And there's nothing good that is going to come of that for the Egyptian people, for that region, or for the world. There's no good that's going to come out of that. We saw this coming 8 years ago. Our old friend Alan Keyes debated Barack Obama in Illinois. I was there, and they talked at great length about foreign policy, and Barack Obama was touting the wonders of soft power, what he called soft power. And Alan Keyes said, you know, soft power won't work when you're faced with a hard threat. That's like meeting a bayonet with a wet spaghetti noodle. So, I mean, the Obama foreign policy is going to get a lot of people killed, and it's going to cost millions, perhaps even billions of people, whatever measure of liberty they might have had. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it. This foreign policy is disastrous. It's absolutely disastrous.
And what about, you know, over in Israel, so like the, because I know there was a dear friend of ours, at least over in the during the primaries. Her name was Michelle, and she's very knowledgeable about the issues over there in Israel and Jewish history. So it'd be great to have her on the show sometime to talk about it. But what's your thoughts on what's, you know, recently been going over there with the Sudan and things of that?
Well, I'm a big supporter of Israel. I support their right to defend themselves and survive. And I oppose, if I was Israeli, I would oppose giving up one inch of territory to any of these people. I would tell the UN to go, you know, jump in the Hudson River. I would tell Obama the same thing. I mean, all they can do is depend on God and depend on each other and fight. And, you know, frankly, same thing is true for us.
Well, and lastly, of course, at least foreign policy wise, is that, of course, I have to bring up Benghazi. I mean, that's still, and that's going to be, you know, I still think discussed and everything that, for quite some time. How do you think things should be handled on that issue? On those events?
Again, the whole thing is a disaster. You have to back up to Obama using our air power to help overthrow the government in Libya. That was the most shameful episode I can think of in American foreign policy history. And frankly, the failure is Obama's, but also the Congress. Well, Obama did all of that without any consultation with the Congress whatsoever until it was all done. And you know what Congress did about it? Nothing. Not a thing. And they abrogated their own responsibility.
You're talking about Libya,
Benghazi,
right?
Yeah, in Libya. I mean, Benghazi didn't just happen. I mean, God only knows what they were doing out of that embassy. You know they were dealing with a lot of bad elements. I mean, the whole thing was a disaster. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, we shouldn't have people in there, diplomats and things. But if you're going to put our people in any country, you defend them. You make sure that they're defended. I mean, we still don't know exactly what went on over there, but I knew the main, most important thing 5 minutes after it happened, which was they all failed in their responsibility to protect our people.
Indeed, as I said, that's probably going to be something that we'll be, you know, hearing about, you know, for quite some time. But I tell you what, I do see that it's the bottom of the hour. If folks just like to listen in or call in chat, that's fine, or chime in anything that they heard tonight. I could just keep the floor open to you, Tom, and if there's anything that you'd like to chime in about that we have not covered. Maybe perhaps some things going on, some plans that yourself or the America's Party has in the works, and so we'll do it that way.
All right. So you say you're going to have some callers, or I didn't quite
understand. Well, we'll see. Well, I've opened it up. We'll see. I've got, some who just want to listen. We've got some who just, some callers who have not chimed in. So it looks like they just want to listen, because I don't see the little mark that says they'd like to chime in. So I guess they're just listening at this point. So until that happens, if that does, regardless, that's fine. Sometimes we have that. So I just would open up the floor if there's anything you'd like to cover or discuss or elaborate more on that you'd like to have gotten the opportunity to talk more about.
Sure. I there's one item that came across today that I think is very important. We saw the rise of Romney Republicanism, and we began to see it expressed in the Congress by the Romney supporters in Congress, when they funded Obamacare and Planned Parenthood and all those things. But we've now gotten rid of Romney, but it's still going on. There was a story that just came across today. I think it was from not David Horowitz, it was from another Horowitz. It's up on around Facebook. I think it's up on America's Party News. But the Boehner and the Republican leadership are continuing to purge conservatives completely out of key committee positions.
Mm-hmm.
We saw what happened in Tampa with the Republican Party, and it was the biggest propaganda show in history. One of the delegates said it wouldn't have mattered if there wasn't a single delegate in a single seat. All the votes would have turned out exactly the same. It's all a sham.
Yeah.
No, that was an actual delegate that said that. I mean, they had the results of voice votes up on the teleprompter before the votes were even taken. So.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. It was already put up there. I was going to mention that.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, look, conservatives, wake up. The Republican Party does not represent you. I've seen extensive surveys. There are polls, just little old polls. They poll 1,000 people. I'm talking surveys that involve hundreds of thousands of respondents that show over and over again there are more self-identified conservatives than self-identified liberals in every single state in the United States, all 50, including those states that you know as these big liberal states.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means, you ask yourself that, well, then why aren't conservatives being represented?
I've got a thought on that one. I was gonna say.
I mean,
go ahead and now chime in. What I think? Go ahead. No, go ahead and now chime in. What I think?
As I thought it through, the only answer I could come up with is that the Republican Party isn't conservative, and it's a false flag operation.
Well, I think that, I think they are, and I was over at a friend's a couple of weeks ago, and they asked me about that, because we were talking about pretty much the same thing, where most at least say that they lean more towards conservatism. Well, then why do not the conservatives win? Of course, when we're talking about conservatives win, we're not necessarily talking about Romney, because we know he wasn't a conservative, but if the duopoly stands, they're supposed to be the ones who are representing we know better, but they're the ones supposedly representing conservatism. But I say, there's one thing about conservatives that, in my opinion, could possibly be, I think it is our greatest asset, but I think when it comes to elections, it could possibly be a detriment, and that, I think conservatives are principled and liberals are not. And the reason I say that is there's a lot of things that Obama's done that a liberal just would not stand for. They're like, I can't believe Obama's done that. So there's a lot of things that, that Obama has done that liberals would not like, but they voted for him anyway. You know what I mean? So, because he's got the D in his name. The conservatives didn't do that. Conservatives voted. But they can vote. They voted with their principles, and so they've either, through abstention or through voting for, a third party or writing in Ron Paul, or something, or writing in, whoever, that's what I think that happened. That's what I think. I think. Go ahead.
I guess I'd have to take issue to that in a certain sense.
Sure, go ahead.
If somebody told you, okay, I support marital fidelity, okay, and then they went out and screwed around on their wife on the weekend, And then Monday they came back and said, I support marital fidelity. When you weigh out their words and their actions, do you think they support marital fidelity?
Sure, okay. Go ahead.
Do they? I mean, do they?
No,
I mean, in their political actions. Remember earlier I said, public policies you support, legislation you support, what politicians do you support? Okay,
right.
I mean, conservatives, and I'm giving a general indictment of conservatives in this country right now, okay, at my own peril, okay? Are they principled? They just voted for Mitt Romney, the father of gay marriage, the gun banner, the father of socialized medicine, complete with $50 copay abortions, the guy who thinks we should have gay scoutmasters and gays in the military and everything else. I mean, are they principled, or are they just saying they are?
Well, and I'll clarify and elaborate more on the point I was making, is that I would say that in comparison with liberals, yes. I mean, if you're comparing liberals, if you're comparing conservatives to liberals, because, I mean, obviously, this was Romney's, in my opinion, this was Romney's election to lose, okay? I mean, with Obama being probably the worst president this country has ever seen, with this being the, quote, most important election of our lifetime, this was Romney's to lose. And I think he lost. Well, I think he lost because look at history. You know, history even told you, even before the primaries were over, that if Romney got the nomination or the way he got a coronation, that he was going to lose. Plain and simple. And, as I said, the liberals, they came out and they voted for it. And, I mean, Obama did get less. Think about that. Obama got less votes than he did last time, right? I'm talking percentages. And he still won. So how many of the conservatives, now I think a lot of moderate Republicans voted for Romney, and I do say a fair amount of conservatives voted for Romney, and I think they voted for him out because they were afraid of Obama. I don't think they voted for Romney because they were voting for the lesser of two evils.
No, I know. So we have two major parties supporting evil. I mean, look, the conservatives lost the minute they began to support Romney, okay? They surrendered. That was the point they lost. As soon as they gave up their principles to vote for this liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this isn't rocket science, okay? They call themselves conservatives. They voted for the most liberal governor in the history of the United States. And they put their force behind it. They lost. I mean, just on the face of it, just speaking as a political professional, okay? How stupid is it to nominate somebody who doesn't represent the rank and file, the base of your party?
The base, right.
They were losers from the beginning.
Exactly.
They were losing opposition in every way, on a principled basis and in every other way.
Well, because I think that the rhinos in the Republican Party actually thought this is our time to get a moderate to liberal Republican in the White House. They thought that people were so afraid of Obama. And I'm not just talking about conservatives and Republicans. I mean, I'm talking about independents. You know, maybe even a few Democrats. They thought they were so afraid of Obama, and there's good reason for that, you know, that they could get Romney in. I bet they truly thought this is our time, because then they could turn around while they're doing it, you know. But then they could turn around and get to the conservatives in the Republican Party and say, you know, they said it this time and they found out they were wrong. They're like, we don't need you anymore. You know, we can win the presidency, you know, without the conservative base. That's what they thought they were going to be able to do. And obviously, you know.
They always think that, and they still think that. They now think that on steroids. I mean, just listen to these guys. Listen to Karl Rove. Listen to these guys. The big mistake here was Romney was too conservative.
Yeah. In what way? Rhetoric? Really?
Well,
he wasn't extreme conservative, though, right?
I mean, it wouldn't take me long to go on YouTube and find clips of Romney on on both sides or all sides of every side you can possibly imagine of every single major question of our day. I mean, come on. I mean,
Well, he was just as much, if not more so, of a flip-flopper as John Kerry. Hey, maybe that's what Massachusetts does to people. I don't know.
Those are
politicians.
But there were certain things that Romney was very consistent on. He was very consistent on his judicial supremacism, his assertion from way back when he tried to run to the left of Teddy Kennedy for the U.S. Senate back in the early 90s. He was claiming back then, if the judges say it, it's law. He said that right on his website concerning the right to life, right up until Election Day. After the horrible Roberts decision on Obamacare, what's the first thing he said publicly? He said if Roberts says it's a tax, it's a tax. He's been consistent about that right along. That's the destruction of our constitutional Republican form of government, which is supposed to consist of checks and balances between the various branches. He's a judicial. He really believes that we live under a judicial oligarchy.
Well, yeah, it's definitely getting that way. Anyway, we've said many times where it's like the president's almost the king now, and you have the politicians are the new oligarchy.
Yeah.
And of course, where does that leave the American people? We're the serfs. We're to serve the politicians now instead of the politicians supposed to be the servants of the people.
It's a coup d'etat. It's a coup d'etat that's been going on for 100 years, but, I mean, it's almost complete. It's been a kind of slow-motion coup d'etat. Actually, even as far back as, like, 1820, Thomas Jefferson was already warning about the judiciary. He was already comparing them to sappers, miners that undermine the wall, the foundations. Just slowly but surely gathering all power to themselves. But they couldn't do it if we didn't have legislators and executives who let them do it, because they don't want to take any responsibility themselves.
Well, it's folks like Boehner. I mean, Boehner's still there. Rince Priebus is still there. Karl Rove is still opening his mouth.
They're all still there. Guess how many incumbent congressmen America's party supported for re-election in the last election? Guess how many?
Now, could you repeat that question?
Guess how many incumbent congressmen America's party supported for re-election in the last election?
Probably none.
That's right.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah, zero. They're all in breach of their oath. They all need to be replaced. All of them.
Yeah, it's definitely a daunting task. Breaking up the duopoly, bringing on multi-parties, and I guess I'll use this few moments here to sometime next week. I'm looking at either the 12th or the 14th. I'm going to have a professor who is an expert in Irish politics, and the reason why I would bring him on is the Irish system has multiple parties. And that's one of the things that we've talked about here on Bard's Logic is multiple parties, and we're just trying to get a schedule that works for the both of us to have him on and describe their party system and how it works over there. So I think that'd be an interesting topic for the folks to hear, especially for those who think, okay, it's time to break open the duopoly and have competition among the different parties in order to, of course, lessen the corruption that we've seen in what the two parties are causing on America.
Well, first of all, the party system is not constitutional. There is nothing in our Constitution about political parties whatsoever. And in fact, George Washington in his farewell address took like 7 or 8 long paragraphs to warn the country against the dangers of party factionalism. Okay, so there's nothing American or constitutional about this so-called two-party system that we have. It's completely imposed by our elected representatives on us. There's nothing. In one sense, I agree with you, that we should have more parties and all of that. But all parties in this country should be expected to adhere to the central moral principles of the country. And we shouldn't be focusing on the parties. We should be focusing on the qualities of the individual representatives. We're supposed to have a system of representative self-government. Mm-hmm.
Well, and well, I believe in a multi-pronged, and I agree with you on those points. I agree on those points, but I do believe in a multi-pronged approach, pincer movement per se, you know, on how to get some changes. But I see here that, you know, the callers that are in have not chimed in to talk. However, we have some folks in the chat who've brought some things up that would like you to take on is we talked a little bit about removing the entitlement programs. You talked about what Virgil Good said. But how would you go about getting rid of, like, you say, well, you mentioned Social Security and Medicare and about their unconstitutionality. What would you go about dismantling those?
Well, you got to – the first thing you have to remember is that those are pay-as-you-go programs. In other words, all of the money that is being expended for those programs right now is being extracted from the people in the states. Okay, so you got that's the first point. You got to keep that in your mind, and it's not that we want anybody to starve. It's not that we want anybody to go without. Okay, it's we want to return to a constitutional form of government. We want a national government that is doing what they are supposed to be doing. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So just take that money within the states and redirect it. You can do a lot better with the money than the federal government is doing anyway, because they're just gathering it all up and spending it all.
Would you recommend phasing it out, or
it's up to the people in the individual states.
That's right. I do remember you're saying you bring it back to the states.
Yeah.
Okay,
look, governments in America only draw their power from the people via the instruments of our Constitution. That's why the U.S. Constitution starts off, we the people of the United States. Okay, that's the authority. And they only get the power that is given to them. And the same is true in the states with the state constitutions. For example, education. The federal government has no constitutional business dealing in education except for training federal employees and dealing with education matters within the military. Okay, but many or most of the state constitutions do have provisions for public education. That's up to them. If the people want them to have that power, they can have that power. I think we could do better, personally, but...
Mm-hmm.
So the answer on those major entitlement programs that are unconstitutional at the federal level is devolve them to the state.
Okay, and I've got here, Trog in the chat has asked, what's your thoughts on the Fed, if we could go over that. We've got about 13 minutes of live. I'd like to try to take the last 5 minutes. So we got about 7-8 minutes of live. We could go into recording if you were up to staying that late.
No,
but
I can deal with it. The Fed is a complicated issue, but I'll try and keep it as brief as I can here. I mean, again, it's upside down right now. The power is all top down. We need to construct a system that is bottom up, where the power actually resides with the people. Okay. Now, you can't just kill the Fed tomorrow, okay, because you would plunge the whole world into economic darkness, okay? So what I believe you do is you create a situation where the Fed dies on the vine. In other words, you give local institutions, right now they have monopoly power in terms of creating money, okay? And and it's in the Federal Reserve Act. You go in there and you give local institutions access to the discount window. And you basically destroy the monopoly. And I believe the Fed would die on the vine once you began to give that power back to the local economies and the local institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the plan that we've been working on for quite some time. I've had lengthy discussions with some of the smartest economic people in the country, and we continue those conversations. I'm not sitting here, Robert, and telling you that I think I have all the answers. It's very complex and it's very difficult. And you have to also figure in that you have to amass the political power to make it happen. But we better do it pretty soon before it's too late.
No, I agree. There's a lot of folks who, I'd say, would agree with that sentiment. But we do have someone here that has chimed in or put the chime in, and that is 301. If you could just give us your name and just tell us, for my curiosity, location, and tell us what is on your mind. So 301, we've got about 5 minutes of lifetime left before I do my spiel. So go ahead. Your mic is live. Thank you for coming to the show.
Oh, thanks, Bard. I'm Steve from Maryland, and I have a question for Mr. Hoefling, whom I've talked with many times over these last 5 years. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to hear him every time. But Tom, I know that you take the oath of office seriously. If you were president, you'd take the oath to say that you'd support and defend the Constitution. What would you do when that first bill comes through? That extends Social Security for another appropriations period, assuming the Senate ever passes a budget again. This thing has taken many decades to put into place. Would you veto that first bill because Social Security is unconstitutional, or would you compromise on that?
No, I would veto it, Steve.
All right. Just wondering.
No, if it's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional. We've got to get back to that being the standard.
Well, now, you were talking about having Social Security die on the vine a minute.
No. I was talking about the Fed.
Okay. All right.
What about Social Security, since it's deemed unconstitutional? Yeah, what would we do about – well, he said bring it back to the states. If the state wanted to have it, that's if the people of the state want to have it, then that's fine with them, just not make it a federal system.
If their state constitution allows it. If their state constitution doesn't allow it, then it doesn't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? We might actually have to get back to really living in liberty and, taking care of our own. I mean, in an ideal system, I would see power at home, and I would like to see our money stay in our county for education, for anything else that we think that we might need as a society where we live. I mean, I don't even like the states having a lot of this power personally. But you were asking me questions as concern the federal government and the federal constitution. So, start following the Constitution. That's the only way we're ever going to get back in this country, is to start following the Constitution.
Okay, Steve, is there anything else you'd like to chime in and ask on that? Or?
No, I'd just like to give Tom a big attaboy.
Thanks, Steve. God bless you, sir.
All right, thanks. Great show, y'all.
All right, thank you very much, and thank you for calling to the show, and I hope to hear from you again. And for the new folks here, or if the people who are recent listeners and continued listeners, thank you very much for coming in tonight. And if you are new, or you are a continued listener and you have not done so and you like to, you can follow the show easy by just clicking the little follow button underneath the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And also for the new folks coming in, while you're there following, check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website and check out the Get Involved page. And there's a wonderful organization out there called the David Sheldred Wildlife Trust. Just click on there and get some information on how you could get a great Christmas present for a loved one by sponsoring a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. But it's only $50 a year, so it's a great cause. I see we got about 6 minutes left, and the rest of the callers would like to just listen. So if you want to make a couple minutes here in a little bit, Tom, to make some closing remarks, go ahead.
All right, well, we've been at this for a long time. I was involved in the Republican Party for a long time. I'd just like to say a few closing words about America's party, because our party is different than any party that anyone has ever seen. In the first place, we're working to restore the plumb line of principle in American politics because we feel that's the most important need. Secondly, we're recreating the way we do politics. We're actually, by example, trying to restore citizen-led self-government in this country from the bottom up, not run by the money interests, not run by the media. We don't care about them. We have the ability to communicate with one another without them, and we got to do a whole lot more of that in these coming months and years. So we're working on that, and most importantly, we need leaders who get it. If folks will go to selfgovernment.us, again, read our platform, read our affiliation agreement, read our leadership pledge. And if you agree with it, sign up, and we will plug you into our organization as we're building it, state by state, county by county, community by community. You know, we have great people, and, you know, we're gathering up all of, not just the principal people, but people of goodwill, decent people, who really do care about the survival of this country, who really care about whether or not their kids and their grandkids, you know, have the gift that we were blessed with in our lives.
Okay, so, well, thank you very much again for coming back to Bard's Logic Political Talk. And, of course, we'd like to have you back again. Thank you very much. And also thank you very much for the listeners out there and for those also who have participated in chat and those listening to the archives. And also, if you'd like to come back, we'd like to see you back tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, where we will have Randy Stufflebeam from the Constitution Party. It'll be great to have him back as well. And also on, remember, on Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight, you can, and that's Eastern Time, you can hear the Tex and Rex show, which that's a great show, and check that out as well. It's also on Blog Talk Radio, and you can follow that show too. But I will end tonight, as I do every other night, and that is a song from one of my favorites, and that is from Aubrey Ashburn, and you can hear more of her music on www.aubreyashburn.com, and that's AubreyAshburn.com. Take care, everyone. Good night, and hope to see you again. Take care.